All right, the third time better work on this time. It's episode 98, and it looks like it's working. It's me, Richie T, and it's just Joni.
Can you hear me?
Yes, good, okay.
Good.
We had a really great thing going two times before now, and that didn't go well. So
it pays to prepare.
Hey, we were plenty prepared. It just didn't work right.
Right. I mean, we jumped in a little hastily.
I was excited to talk to you.
I know.
Because you got cute hair again today.
Thanks.
Coming up in the second and third block of this episode, episode 98, we visit with Shannon Hale, the author of the book Austinland and...
And many others.
Like what?
The Actor and the Housewife is one that I've read. I've also read Austinland.
Yeah, what'd you think of Austinland?
It was good.
It's made into a movie, you know. You don't even have to read the book now.
I know, but the book will be better.
You think so?
It always is.
Is it?
Yeah.
There's a lot of good-looking people in the movie.
Who's in it? I don't even know.
There's a guy by the name of Ricky Whittle, who I got to interview when the film was at Sundance. He's a good-looking gentleman. He's the black man who speaks with an English accent. If you ever get
the
to see
one
the
and
movie.
Only black
I think there's
man
only one. I can imagine that there would only be a couple, maybe.
Alex Boyer doesn't count.
Yeah. No, even better looking than Alex Boyer.
Okay.
Watch out, ladies. Not LDS like Alex Boyer, though.
Mm.
Also she wrote Goose Girl, right? That's probably
yes.
what she's most known for.
Yes.
Would you agree with that?
Yes. And that's a whole series, the Goose Girl.
Is it like
series.
Goosebumps, but
not
the
quite.
Girl version?
Not quite.
Less scary?
Definitely less scary. Yeah, unless
what
you're
it,
really...
What is it even about?
Unless you're scared of geese. And then it's really scary.
Then it's the freakiest thing you've ever read in your life. And what is it about?
It's been a long time since I read it, but I remember there's geese and
girls. Perfect.
Yeah,
thanks for the recap.
It's
all right.
A peasant girl. She's on the run. From royalty. I can't remember. It's been a long time.
So read them yourself. We're not going to read
That's
a books
right.
for you.
Yeah. What do you want from us?
Entertainment, I think, is what people wanted.
Okay.
What's new with you, Jess Joni?
Okay. So I have a funny little story.
Yes.
About the Cultural Hall.
Okay.
And me. So I got a Facebook message from a girl I went to college with. We are friends, but not super good friends. I mean... Not
so
super
more
close
like acquaintance
friends.
Then.
We're acquaintances. We went to a concert together once.
Who?
Indigo Girls.
Okay.
Okay. So.
So she likes women. That's cool.
She likes
no,
women who sing well,
okay.
as do I. So, she sends me this message and she says, "So this is so odd. I was Googling the phrase eccentric old lady because I like to see images for." Characters in books that I'm reading so I can get them in my mind, and I look at these images and there's all these weird old ladies, and then there's you, and I click on the picture and it takes me to theculturalhall.com because in my bio the first phrase on the Cultural Hall about us page says Joni aspires to be an eccentric old lady one day
oh,
and is practicing
awesome.
Right now. So random search, she randomly comes across my picture, comes to the Cultural Hall, and she was like, "That is so cool. I didn't even know you were involved in that." And I thought it was hilarious that through the phrase eccentric old lady, she ended up at the Cultural Hall.
Now, does she listen? Is this
no,
a friend that's
doesn't.
Heard of it?
No,
heard
she's
of it
never even heard of it before.
Yeah, there you are.
Yeah.
That's hilarious.
Which bio needs to be updated a little bit.
Oh, it doesn't?
Yeah, I'm no longer the primary chorister.
Oh, yeah. Well, send me the revisions. That's awesome. Especially since you're on like these pages of just these crazy eccentric old women. And then there's you, which is a really good picture when you had the long
right,
hair.
Right, thank you.
Yeah,
we should put a new picture on there too.
Yeah, well, send that too. I can't do everything, pal. You can check out and find out about all the folks that help participate in the Cultural Hall by going to the About Us section at theculturalhall.com. That's funny. That's
yeah.
a great story. I don't think I shared this, but I found out I'm going deaf.
What?
Yeah. And so I went to the... I have an ear, nose, throat specialist who about 8 years ago when I started losing my voice because I was performing so much, I had to go and visit because I had nodes on my vocal cords.
Okay.
Not bad. In fact, they said they may not even be nodes. They may be like just a swelling or something like that, but I had to go just the same. And this was the office that I went to. So when I had to go back because I'm like, I think I'm going deaf,
Because you can't hear stuff. Because
I can't hear stuff. I always have to say to my wife, what? Now, granted, my wife could talk louder, and that would make things a little bit less stressful about some things. You know, like if I always am asking what, here's the thing, right? I don't want her to shout, because then I think shouting kind of breeds some sort of contention. But I certainly think that if the other person is always saying, can you say that again? What? Or I can't hear you. To me, in my mind, the next natural step is, well, around this person, around grandma, we talk louder because grandma can't hear so well.
Or and our husband, Richie.
Yeah. Or husband, me. So I call up and I'm making an appointment to visit with the ear doctor to have my deafening confirmed. And I talked to Wendy. I think it's Wendy. It might be Lindy. I'm not sure.
You couldn't hear it.
Yeah, it was in my bad ear. And I said, hey, well, my name is Richie Stedman, and I need to get an appointment. And we're talking, and we talked for a little bit because she needed to get some information from me. And then towards the end of it, she goes, is this this the same Richie Stedman that does the cultural hall?
Wow.
And I said, well, as a matter of fact, it is. Thank you. And she said, oh, well, my husband and I, we just love it. He drives truck,
that
I think she said.
That is awesome.
They either drives truck or hires a duck. Again, it was through the bad through the bad ear. But they found it through another blog site's recommendation of podcasts that people should listen to. And so then when I went in for my appointment, I'm registering, and I don't know what this woman looks like or whatever, and I do all my insurance information or whatever, and this woman grabs the clipboard, and she leans forward to me and keeps it very hush-hush and says, I just want you to know, I'm Wendy. I'm the one who listens to the podcast.
And I was like, you cool. said, could you speak up a little bit?
I'm like, what? Huh? So about the deaf thing. So when God invented bodies, he gave you hearing for most people, and he did that for me. And part of that hearing process is, you know, you got the bones in the ear, right? You got the hammer, and you got the other part, and
anvil.
The anvil, and then there's one other thing.
There's a drum in there.
Yeah, right. And so the eardrum, I've got a perfectly fantastic eardrum here on the left hand side, and on my right hand side, I have no sort of eardrum.
Really?
Yeah, I had one. And through a series of perhaps poor choices, or maybe just, you know, degenerative, whatever, it's gone away.
Okay.
And so the way they test...
So it's still there, it just won't drum.
No, like it's like, it's still there, like if you took an actual drum and you cut a bunch of holes in it.
Okay.
Like a snare drum,
gotcha.
And you cut a bunch of holes in it. Yeah, sure, the drum is still there, but for what it's supposed to do as a drum... It doesn't do anymore.
Yeah.
They put this little like knobbin in your ear to test your eardrum, right?
Uh-huh.
And it looks like the top of a dish detergent thing, you know, little thing that you pop off and then the dish detergent squirts out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, kind of round and whatever. Anyway, they stick it in your ear and then they blow air into your ear. And then, you know, the air bounces back and it's kind of like sonar or something. And that's what they give you the read on the eardrum, right? Like, oh, good, the eardrum's working. So they do that on the left-hand ear. Perfect. Nothing. No problem. Boom. You know, bounce back, whatever. Yep. See the little meter peak. Then they put it on the right ear and they go, pff. And like the guy on the other side of the room from the other side of my ear is like, whoa, what was that? Right? Just straight through. Not really straight through, but like they couldn't get anything to bounce off. So they're like, let me try that again. And at this point, I'm like, I'm pretty sure this isn't supposed to be what's happening. So then they're like, we better get a better look at it. So they look in and
so sure what
enough,
do you do now?
So now I get a fake eardrum. I get eardrum enhancements.
So you have to get surgery? Is it surgery?
Oh, yeah. Knocked out surgery.
Do you have it
Call
planned?
The Relief Society. Yeah.
Wow.
September 9th. 2 weeks from today. I go,
are you nervous?
I'm only nervous in that, like, that being put out kind of nervousness. I've done it before. I had my tonsils out as an adult.
Hmm.
And then I also, when I had my implants put in,
right,
I had to be knocked out so that they could drill up into my jawbone. So
that
it's
sounds
not,
delightful.
It's, I don't know.
Well, I'm glad you're getting it fixed.
Right.
So that you can hear all those crazy things people are saying about you.
Yo. You know what's interesting, though, is you know where they get the skin?
I don't want to know.
Okay.
I do want to know.
Yeah. Well, it's... It's not there.
Okay. You gave me a funny look.
They get it from
behind your ear,
that little soft kind of supple skin that's right there behind your ear.
Huh.
That's where they take it from.
And
then
so
they craft you a new eardrum, and then they say I should be able to hear better.
Awesome.
Right?
That is pretty amazing that they can do that even.
Yeah. I didn't know they could. But I'm like, will it just heal naturally? Do I have to do the surgery? They're like, probably not. So then I called my wife. I said, I have to have surgery. And she said, oh, that's going to be fun. And I said, no, I don't want to go run. I'm having a surgery.
Wendy will take care of you.
Hearing jokes are funny.
They are.
But I seriously am calling out, and I know that several members of my ward listen to this. I'm calling out the Relief Society. I'm expecting casseroles Monday the 9th, Tuesday the 10th. Wednesday the 11th, because I'm the one that normally makes dinner in my household. My wife works all the way till 5. She doesn't want to have to come home, take care of me, and make dinner.
Well,
ladies?
Good. You're making their job easy. So they know.
Nothing with tuna fish in it. No tuna noodle casseroles. Although one time I did have a good tuna noodle casserole.
It's because you haven't had mine. Mine's good.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
You really make a good tuna noodle casserole?
Mm-hmm.
Is it from scratch?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, the noodles... I purchased the noodles.
Yeah, you don't make the noodles from scratch, yeah. But it's not like Tuna Helper or something.
No, right. Yeah, yeah.
I got to tell you about this. This was fascinating to me yesterday in church. I was sitting and about four or five rows in front of me, sitting in the overflow because there's like 700 members in our ward right now.
Wow.
We're getting split in 2 weeks. That's okay. The big thing that we're talking about. And it's probably a stake being split too. And I'm noticing that on the bread tray, there's also a baggie.
Oh.
Right?
Is it for gluten-free bread?
Hang on.
So sorry.
And so there's
breaking your story.
So there's a baggie, like a Ziploc baggie, just small one, little mm-hmm. small Ziploc baggie on the thing. And I was like, did some kid, you know, with his Cheerios, did he take a piece of bread, take some and leave some? You know what I'm saying? Like sharing it?
Yeah.
And then I look closer and it looks like wafers, like a Catholic wafer, if you've ever taken the Catholic sacrament mm-hmm. before. You know, it's kind of a round, almost like the size of a Ritz or maybe like a, what are those, better cheddars?
But really flat.
Yeah, but super flat, right? White,
mm-hmm.
But inside this bag, and as you guessed it, you already knew it was gluten free, but it was a cracker; it wasn't bread. And you know, it gets passed, and I see the family that takes it, and I know they seem to be a very health conscious, you know, watch very much what they eat kind of family, and I thought, well, that's kind of a bizarre thing, and then I thought, or is it? And my mind kind of went two places with it. One. Three places, I guess. First of all, is I wonder how many people that they went. Well, hold on, you can't do that. It has to be bread. Mm. I wondered where how many people's minds went that way. Because have you ever seen anything else in the bread tray?
No.
Right. So you know, the odd thing being the number one thing. Number two, I thought, well, wait a minute. The bag was closed. If God's gonna bless it, doesn't it have to be out in the open?
Like opening your mouth.
Yeah, like opening.
If you already ate your food.
Well, no, but it's like why the bread is broken.
Right.
Like, does the cracker need to be broken? You know, does it need to be out of the bag? Because we don't just bless the loaf of bread.
Right.
So there was kind of that sort of thought about it as well. And then the third was, do I think, and surely I should have been focusing on like repentance and the atonement and everything like that. But, you know, my mind went there as I thought, do you think that it will come to the point within the church where everyone will partake of gluten-free because it's just going to be safer for everybody?
I don't know. I think that there are definitely people who have gluten intolerances, but I think the whole gluten-free fad is kind of a fad. Because I think that if you're not actually intolerant to it, it's not that big of a deal. But that's my own opinion.
You don't know what I go through. I eat wheat and... Well, and that was the thing, because then I'm actually pretty good friends with the family who did it. I'm like, what was that? Or is that what we're doing now, is we're doing gluten-free wafers? And she's like, well, yeah, you know, they said, I think it's one of the sons. And so everyone else takes it and kind of
support.
Yeah, support for it. You know, we don't remember very often, but when we do, we try and, you know, we try and do it. And I said, is that little piece of bread going to kill him?
Yeah.
You know, in that extremely sensitive way that I have about addressing things. I'm like, that little piece of bread is going to kill him? That that much? She's like, well, you know, we're encouraged to not allow him to have any gluten at all. And so I was wondering if it was one of those things where, you know, now it's starting to be introduced. Is it just a fad, or are people finding how gluten can be for their body, or living gluten-free makes them that much kind of cleaner?
I don't see it changing, you know, for the masses anytime soon. But I wouldn't surprise me if eventually we went somewhere that, I mean, originally it was bread and wine. We changed wine to water. That was a big change. Right?
Well, and all from the same cup, too. That's what I miss.
Yeah.
I wish we still did that.
I miss it, too.
A big old cup of
bacteria.
Yeah, delicious bacteria passed around. Which brings me to an interesting thing. I'm kind of down. Do you have anything else about that? I love the response that people are giving us to the Mormon History Guy facts on the Cultural Hall Facebook page.
Yeah, there's some interesting stuff in there that kind of been obscured in history that nobody would know about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyone in particular that you went, well, that's interesting?
The guy who was trying to be the voice of reason for the Mountain Meadows massacre probably spoke with a stutter, that he said.
Yeah.
Which was really interesting to me. I mean, it doesn't really mean anything except that there was a guy who was trying to be a voice of reason who happened to have a stutter. But that stood out to me. I remember it.
Yeah. The idea of Lorenzo Snow, that one was the one that fascinated me, where Lorenzo Snow was a bachelor and had basically committed himself up to the priesthood and then got married a couple times.
Yeah. Oh, and Brigham Young said that weekly baths were not for everyone.
Yeah. So some fun stuff. If you're not following the Cultural Hall on Facebook, it's just facebook.com/thecultural hall, and you can find it out there and leave comments there, suggest other episodes that you feel like we should be doing here in the Cultural Hall. Love to have those suggestions. Last week, the Sons of Helaman was based off of someone's suggestion of, hey, get to the bottom of this. What is this group?
Cool.
And pretty fascinating interview. I'm interested to see, as the comments continue to roll in on that episode, what people think. And yeah, anything forthcoming as far as that goes. You can also follow us on Twitter. We had a message that was sent to us the other day from someone who found the Cultural Hall because for General Conference, we will live tweet General Conference. And said, yeah, you know what? I didn't know who or what you guys were, but you guys had some really funny and also some really insightful tweets from General Conference. And so I found out that you guys had a website, and then I find out you guys had a podcast, and I've been really enjoying it. So that's been pretty cool.
Awesome.
And then Pinterest, you're probably one to speak better about our Pinterest page than I would be.
Sure. Yeah, I follow our Pinterest page, obviously. And anything Mormon that you can think of is on there. There was a series lately that Carly posted about using Disney images, but they're like memes with Mormon themes, but they were Disney images. I don't remember how many of them, so they were funny.
Yeah. So you can find that. They're recipes, I
recipes,
know.
Recipes, crafts, ideas for gifts, anything to do with Relief Society, Young Women's Primary, you know, Elders Quorum. Yeah. You know, I don't know a lot of Elders Quorum guys who are on Pinterest, so that's probably more geared towards the women, but
I'm going to rock a doily next time I
do
teach.
It.
I am. I'm rocking the doily.
Rock it.
I'm actually going to make a t-shirt, too, that says I'm rocking the doily.
Sweet.
Yeah, so Pinterest, and then you can obviously subscribe to the podcast through iTunes and encourage you to do that. That's a great way to just have it. Just have it be there, because like this last weekend, I didn't post till Sunday night because I was at a concert all day on Saturday, and I was really tired when I got home Saturday night. So you can get it the second that it's there, get it put on your iPod.
Yeah, I listen
iPhone.
Through Stitcher.
Oh, do you?
Mm-hmm.
And that's, for a lot of people that have a problem with listening to it just on the website itself, theculturalhall.com, they say Stitcher is the way to go because you can just listen to it on your phone and other things can be going on your phone.
Right.
What else are we missing? Something. Oh, you can leave a review on iTunes and encourage you to do so. A couple people have done that, and that helps other people find the podcast.
And we also have a Contact Us page on our Cultural Hall website if you have anything you'd like us to know.
Yeah. Something I'm going to do probably moving forward once we get past the 100th episode, is I'm going to ask for people to be or to kind of check in to represent, and we'll have a list of wards that are represented, like who you are and what ward you're in. And we'll have that available so you can see who's a lifer, meaning that they've listened to every episode of the Cultural Hall, or who's just a convert, meaning they picked up somewhere after we'd started and have been listening, or just, you know, catch an occasional episode.
It's getting harder and harder if you are a convert to become a lifer. There's a lot of back episodes.
Yeah.
So.
And some of the earliest ones are my favorite. I'll never forget when I went back. I don't go back and listen because I hate the sound of my own voice,
which is hilarious
because I talk all the time
on the radio.
Yeah. But I go back and I listen to episode number one, which is available at theculturalhall.com, where Lauren and I sit down and we go, well, I guess we'll do this. This is how we'll do this, right? Is that how we're going to do this? And then we just kind of muddle our way through it. And then those first early episodes have kind of coming through it. And then, of course, as I think of over the history of it, I think of episode 13 and 14 with Mitch Main, mm-hmm. where we visited with him. I think to date, he's the only two-episode podcast that we've done. Any that stand out to you in particular?
Throughout the whole series?
Yeah, throughout the whole time.
I remember being so impressed with, and I don't know how to say his name. Yeah. Semenka or whatever.
Oh yeah,
his name.
Samaki,
yes.
Yeah, the guy he was running for, he actually ended up losing, but he ran for the president of the country of Mali.
But listening to his experiences were fascinating to me. I was really amazed. I like the topical ones. I really get after those. I think that the Cultural Hall has done a lot to discuss, you know, sexuality within Mormon culture, which I think is a niche that needs to be filled. So I've always been really interested in, you know, like the marital intimacy ones, you know, real intimacy. And, you know, we had Ernie Harker on. He's my cousin. So that was fun for me.
And also we had another one that I constantly will get, not I wouldn't say secret messages, but just like a, hey, thanks, that helped me out a lot, was the talking about spousal abuse and the relationship of how you should treat your partner.
Yeah, that was a good one too.
So you can check those all out. If you go to theculturalhall.com and go to listen now, you can see those. And some of them are happy too.
I know, yeah. No, I loved the Corbin Allred one. I loved the Jerusha Hess one. So, I mean, there have been some really great ones.
Yeah. And we're coming up on 100, and we've got plans for a big celebration going on, for real.
I'll believe you. I do believe you. I just don't know what they are.
Yeah. We're going to do a concert. We're going to have a bunch of food. And it's going to be an outdoor concert.
Love it.
Coming up at the end of September. We're gonna
awesome.
We're gonna have it. I think we're gonna call it Family Home Evening.
Cool.
And I think we got that idea because the church has a thing on Monday nights called Family Home Evening.
Right.
And so I think instead of trying to reinvent the wheel, I think we're just gonna call it Family Home Evening.
Yeah, and we're just gonna ride the wheel that's already been invented.
Yeah, and I think we're gonna really do it like almost to the point of like checking it off. So there will be, I think we'll probably do an opening prayer for real. Then we'll have entertainment with music. So there will be songs, music. There will be a brief, some sort of lesson-ish type thing, and then there will be refreshments. And
nice.
Then we'll send everyone on their way. And then, boom! That's the best family home evening ever.
And then you're gonna record it live.
Some of it, yeah.
Okay.
Maybe do a live episode there. Haven't decided yet. But I've got the bands lined out, and I'm really excited about
that.
Sweet. They're really good.
Are you keeping that under your hat for now?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'll announce it next week.
Okay.
Because we'll start having tickets. I don't think we'll... I think we'll do donation for tickets. We'll have a go to something. That part hasn't been worked out either. But I got the bands, and they're good.
Good.
Yeah. All right, so here we go. Coming up, the second and third block, it's Shannon Hale, author of the book Austinland, Goose Girl. What's that other one?
Actor and a Housewife.
And what else?
I can't remember. She's written a lot. I just can't remember
them
all.
She's a prolific writer, and yeah. It was cool to see how this interview took place. I was at my day job, and she came by and was interviewed for my day job, and I've been trying to get her for 6 months. And then she was like, now? Should we do it now? And then we do it now.
Nice.
That's coming up in the second and third block of the Cultural Hall.
Running a small business today can be difficult enough. Imagine all the work you have to do to market it. Imagine the hours you put in to create promotional materials for it. Now, imagine a partner that can help you with all of that and more. Imagine Lennon Design. Lennon Design is your partner in business when you need a professional look at a price you can afford. Whether it's websites, advertising media, promotional materials, and more, Lennon Design can help you promote your business. When you need creative, affordable designs, let it be Lennon Design. Call 801-699-3022 or visit LennonDesign.com.
It's time for the second block here of the Cultural Hall, and visiting here with us, very kind of random how this comes about. We tried to get in touch with her about, I want to say 6 months ago, and she said, I'm too busy. And then I talked to her today, and she said, I'm going to be really busy unless we do this right now. So it's Shannon Hale. Thanks for being here.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Now, you're here doing media for Austinland, a film that was at the Sundance Film Festival, and based on a book that you wrote. But people would most likely know you from Goose Girl.
Yeah, and probably The Princess Academy. My young adult and children's books are probably what better known.
Okay. And I think it's really cool to have you here in the Cultural Hall. Are you familiar with the Cultural Hall at all?
I am. Well, I know that my friend Jerusha Hess was on the Cultural Hall.
Mm-hmm.
She interviewed with you. She and I co-wrote the script for Austinland, and she directed the movie. And of course, she's known for, she and her husband did Napoleon Dynamite and Nacho Libre.
Yeah. So here in the Cultural Hall, since it's the Cultural Hall, we like to talk about all sorts of aspects of individuals. Typically in media, people will leave kind of religious things out of their lives. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like they kind of just vaguely go across stuff and go, oh, and my beliefs. And then that's all you hear about it. So here we kind of dive into that a little bit. First of all, tell everyone about Austinland, what it is.
Austinland came about when I was young and single and falling in love with Colin Firth in Pride and Prejudice. I just noticed all of my friends, the movie had just come out, the BBC 6-hour miniseries of Pride and Prejudice, and all my friends were getting so obsessed with it that it was actually kind of hard to think about finding a normal relationship because mm-hmm. nothing could stand up to Mr. Darcy. And I thought, wouldn't it be great to go to a place where you could really live in Austin's, one of her stories, to see, is it really that great as we're making out to be? And being a writer, I like to explore things through words. And so I started writing a book that explored a character who went to an immersive Austin vacation where she could put on the outfits and live in a manor house and interact with a cast of characters and try to live out her own Austin story.
And I don't think that's just for you and your friends. I think that let me pose this question to you. Do you think that that's mainly just Mormon women or just women in general that want this kind of...
I think it's been very popular among Mormon women, but certainly it's not exclusive to Mormon women. I think women anywhere are really interested in Austin's kinds of stories that... see, people, when they jump forward too fast and move too fast in a story and right into casual sex or something, that they're missing the romance part of it. And I think mm-hmm. women really long and love for that. It's a very sweet kind of unfolding love story. But in Austinland, I also wanted to explore it as a comedy because it's ridiculous that we are falling in love with fictional characters.
Mm-hmm.
They're not real. And I think it's hysterical. And so to both, I like to write things that both make fun of the thing and actually is the thing that it's making fun of
mm-hmm.
and play on it like that. And I think that in Austinland, it's an exploration of people who are fascinated with Jane Austen's stories, but really it's about any sort of fandom, any sort of obsession, you know, be it Star Wars or Twilight or anything that we get so into, involved in, that we start to forget what is real and what is fantasy.
You mentioned Twilight, and I know Stephanie Meyer was involved with Austinland as well.
Yeah.
What was her involvement?
She was a producer.
Okay. And then are you guys, because, I mean, she's Mormon, obviously, you're a Mormon individual as
yes.
well. Is there like this... secret group of Mormon women writers who are like, hey, we're going to slowly take over the world. Watch out. We're going for the velvet chairs kind of
yes,
stuff.
Yes, we've made secret oaths to take over the world, and people should be scared.
So because, I should call you Kish Kuman.
Yes,
is what you're saying.
I'm basically Kish Kuman in this scenario, and Stephanie's Gaddy Atten. No, we, I think that maybe our Mormonness was just one extra aspect that. That said, hey, we've got a lot in common, both with Jerusha and Steph and me. we're, you know, we're also mothers, we're also writers. Mm-hmm. We live in this weird, you know, Utah, Idaho, or sorry, Arizona kind of place in the world. We just had so much in common. We love reading. We love books. We love movies. And just with that basis of having so much in common, and yet each of us being so different and having something so different to bring to the project, that mm-hmm. it was just magical.
Is it kind of fun, though? I mean, obviously, I'm going to keep bringing it back to the Mormon side of stuff, but is it kind of fun that it's like, hey, yeah, what, you know, we all have this sort of thing in common? And there are others. There are a lot of, you know, increasingly becoming these, you know, these, what do you call it? Like book to movie, you know, big blockbuster kind of things, which we know Austin Land will be, of course. Fingers crossed.
So nice. It's very common. I think a lot of people know they can trust Mormons. I mean, we tend to be pretty honest. And I think maybe that's a little bit different in something like Hollywood, where you're never really sure who's shooting straight. And we're just without guile. Yeah. and it is fun. It's fun to be around people who don't think I'm a freak, or they think of it in, you know, in a positive way that I'm a freak. Uh-huh. It is, you know, in the book world, I am a freak. And whenever I travel and go around and people know that I'm Mormon and I'm the only one at the table not drinking, uh-huh. and, you know, there's a freakiness to it. And it's fine, but it does get tiring sometimes. So it is nice just to be around people that I'm like, oh, they know where I'm coming from. They get me. I can make the Kish Kuman joke and they're going to get it.
And Getty who?
Yeah, exactly. And you know, we were filming, we filmed the movie. We filmed Dawsonland in England over 7 weeks. And Steph and Drusha and I and our families all went to church every Sunday, uh-huh. the local ward, uh-huh. and, you know, and it was a really nice kind of grounding, normal place to be, to feel like where we were away from some of our families. So here we are together at the family ward.
Let me ask you, does things like Napoleon Dynamite transcend over into England, like in the ward there? Although Napoleon Dynamite, not a Mormon movie, and I know you didn't necessarily have any involvement with it, but hopefully you'll be able to answer this question, where you feel like that sort of Mormon culture transcends the fact that it's a different country, and everyone's like, oh my gosh, it's, you know, it's these people that are doing this project. Was there that kind of feeling?
They definitely knew it, especially in the ward, they knew it. But I don't know if it transcended broadly. It is such an American movie.
Okay.
You know, and it's, but you know, then again, it's such a Idaho, Utah kind of a movie. Like, I remember there was a friend of mine who lived in Idaho. He was telling me he read a review of Napoleon Dynamite in which the reviewers talked about how the Hesses had created this strange fantasy land. And he's like, Fantasyland. Yeah. This is like the most realistic movie I've ever seen. Yeah. You know, I think people get it or they don't, mm-hmm. outside of the region, and inside the region, we're just like, yeah, that's how it is.
Yeah. I want to talk about, you mentioned that, you know, these women fall in love with the idea of Jane Austen's characters and everything like that. So let's take it a little more serious, a little more sociological for a second. Do you feel like that is a problem for the young folk? The young women folk within the church, too high of expectations, and that's why you see increasingly more single folk?
I think that's a really interesting question, and I think it's worth discussing and questioning. I personally haven't seen any direct evidence of that. I haven't known anybody personally who gave up on a marriage or didn't pursue a marriage because of that. But I don't know that it's really changed. I mean, I certainly felt that way when I was younger, pre-Twilight or pre-anything, that you do get this ideal, whether it's in a story or whether it's a story you tell yourself, mm-hmm. about what the perfect guy would be.
Yeah. And then he'll come to me like this.
Well, I mean, it's the fairy tale idea, right? Sure. That everybody's waiting for the, you know, not everybody, but there's this idea that a prince is going to come and sweep off your feet and he's going to be perfect. And of course, the reality is that marriage is awesome because nobody is perfect and nobody's just right. And you get a chance to grow and change and learn together. And I have a very happy marriage, and couldn't be happier. My husband and I are perfect for each other and are so different in such weird ways that it makes it even more exciting. And he's not Mr. Darcy, and he's not a prince on a horse, and that's awesome.
Sorry, Brother Hale. Sorry to let you know that.
He's more of a golem if we're gonna pick a fairy tale. Yeah. That would be what he is. He's awfully creepy. I mean, you know, he lurks around the house. He puts on masks and tries to scare me. That's awesome. And never in my wildest, you know, fantasies, if I was like dreaming up the perfect man, would I think, I hope he puts on masks and hides around the house.
Wait, really? He does?
Oh, yeah. Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
Oh, I thought you were just Okay.
No, he's extraordinarily creepy. And anybody who's listening to this who knows Diener is just nodding their head like, yeah, no, yeah, he is, okay. Yeah. And he's an absolute sweetheart.
What got you into writing?
I always wanted to write. Always was making up stories before I was even literate. So it was just, I mean, there's lots of different ways of telling stories, and ultimately playing with words was my favorite way. I did theater for a while, and I was interested in that, but I really love just writing words on a page, finding the right sentence.
So just kind of a language nerd.
I'm a language nerd, absolutely, and a story nerd, but mostly it's just about stories, and I'm just compelled. I always have story ideas in my head. I always have characters trying to talk to me and words that are popping into my head, and that's really where I'm the most satisfied.
What's the first thing you ever wrote?
Oh, I have a story I wrote in kindergarten about a witch with long fingernails. And then I used to make up these little plays when I was little and put them on for my parents or my grandparents or the neighborhood, and they weren't any good. But, you know, I had that need to tell stories. And it wasn't until I was in fourth grade that I had a teacher at Wasatch Elementary in Salt Lake City, Mrs. Spackman, who started us writing short stories and poems. Mm-hmm. And that was the first time I realized, oh, I could actually do this. The books that I read, somebody writes those. And I decided right then that that's what I wanted to do.
Really? Fourth grade?
Fourth grade.
That's it?
Mm.
So then what? Then what's the path after fourth grade for you?
I kept writing. By the time I got to high school, I realized that almost everybody I knew wanted to be a writer, and all the adults I knew said, find something easier to do. So I knew.
Oh, pat on the head.
Yes.
You want to be a writer.
Yeah, why
awesome.
Don't you go into business?
Yeah.
Try accounting. But so I kept it a secret. I stopped telling people that's what I wanted to do because
really?
I felt like, I felt first of all that, oh, everybody wants to, and it's unrealistic. And I started to feel like it was like saying, I want to be a princess when I grow up, you know, uh-huh. It was a fantasy that couldn't come true. But I was an English major at the University of Utah. And then, when I was going to go to graduate school, I decided there's nothing else I really wanted to do besides write. So I decided to get an MFA in creative writing. And that was the first time. It was very scary for me to like come out of the writer's closet and admit, okay, this is actually what I want to do.
My name is Shannon Hale, and...
And I want to be a writer. Hi, Shannon.
She's so brave. She's so brave. And so then what? So then...
I got an MFA in Montana while I was
there.
Oh, they're
very good for MFAs.
Yes.
In creative writing.
In Missoula.
Montana, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then I started writing The Goose Girl while I was up there. And of course, I've been writing for years, but all of it was unpublishable. But The Goose Girl was my first novel that I published.
Unpublishable just because you don't feel like it was any good?
Yeah, it was all just, you know, working. It takes a long time to figure out your voice, to learn the craft. I think a lot, because most people are literate, that there's an assumption that, you know, I can write, so I can write a book.
Mm-hmm.
But it's actually, it's as complicated as becoming a professional opera singer or a ballet
dancer.
Oh,
no, it's
you
just
know?
Putting words down on a page. I can
know,
write a book.
That's what it seems like. Yeah.
Actually, some books I read, it just seems like that's all
and
it is.
And that's very possible. those do exist.
Which is unfortunate. So Goose Girl, where did the idea for that come about?
My favorite book when I was younger was The Hero and the Crown or The Blue Sword by Robin McKinley. And her first book was called Beauty. It was based on Beauty and the Beast. And I just thought maybe I could write a story and, you know, take her path and base a story on my favorite fairy tale. And The Goose Girl was my favorite fairy tale when I was younger. And so I thought I could write that over the summer. And 4 years later, I did finish it. And I had lots of rejections. Pretty much everybody rejected it.
Mm-hmm. How come?
Oh, they didn't like it, or it wasn't right for them.
Do they typically? I don't really know the process. I've been one of those people that's like, you know, someday I'll write a book.
Right,
I'm that guy.
Yeah,
I'll probably never write a book, but I have the audacity to be like, you know, I could
if I wanted to. Someday I'm going to be the host of Cultural Hall.
Right, exactly. It's exactly like that kind of thing. But. When you submit these things to editors and stuff like that, right? That's
right.
How it goes.
Mm-hmm.
Do they typically give you some sort of thing like it's too pure or anything
right.
like that, or do they just go not interested?
Some of them did that. Some of them sent letters, which was nice. And some of the reasons were they said, you know, one person said young adult books are getting more edgy,
mm-hmm.
and my book wasn't edgy enough for them. Others just thought it was too slow, and that they didn't think children would be interested in it. And then it's gone on to be, you know, much more successful than 99% of the books that are published.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, and it's 26 printing. It's, you know, it turns 10 years old this year.
Jeez.
And, you know, it's very rare for a book to stay in print for 10 years. So I feel extremely grateful. And it's just a matter of finding the right audience. Not every book is going to work for every person. Mm-hmm. And those editors, it just wasn't right for them. So I just had to keep going until I found the one that was right for.
Coming back in the third block, I want to talk about what you kind of the feeling was as you got that acceptance, like, hey, it's going to move forward. And then also talk about the choice to kind of stay away from the edgy that you did. So that'll be coming back here in the third block of the Cultural Hall.
Sidewinder Media was named as one of Utah's top photographers by In This Week magazine and is a winner of several awards for fine art, portrait, and event photography. Sidewinder Media has been professionally photographing everything from wildlife to headshots for over 10 years. Sidewinder Media has the experience and the knowledge to capture your special occasion or portrait the way you want it. They also film and edit music or product videos and do simple ads for Facebook or websites. Email them at sidewindermedia@gmail.com or call Rusty at 801-941-5500 5576 to book your shoot today.
All right, so you submitted it to a bunch of people. Did you then do like rewrites? Oh, maybe they were right. Maybe this is moving too slow. Or were you like, no, I believe in this. This is what it needs to be. I just haven't found the right people.
At that point, I had rewritten it at least 20 times. It was a really solid draft. So I really felt good about where it was. And the feedback that we got was not constructive in that I can see that that's a weakness that I can improve. It was change it utterly. Mm-hmm. And I knew that that was not where I wanted to go with it. Honestly, the rejection was so hard. Rejection's always hard, but it especially when you're first starting out, that I would have given up. But I did have an agent at that point. And here's another little Mormon connection. I couldn't get any agents to read my manuscript.
You could not get any agents?
No, I kept querying and no one would agree to read it. And then I had a friend who moved to New York. And I said, you have to meet somebody for me in publishing and make a personal connection for me. And at her LDS ward, she met somebody who worked in a literary agency.
Yes.
And who was brand new, was just had been in the agency for a while, but just starting to wanting to represent. Mm-hmm. And so I was her first client. She agreed to read it. She read the first five chapters. She read the rest. She said, yes, I believe in this. So when the rejections came and I was like, I just want to give up and crawl in a hole and die.
Were you married at this point?
At that point, I was, yeah.
Uh-huh. Husband pretty good about being like, oh, come on, babe. Right, slap on the rear end. Come on,
yeah. Creepy, but golden.
Yeah, here's a mask and a slap on the tush.
Yeah. No, he could not be more supportive in every way. He's glorious.
Good.
He's honestly my partner. He reads all my books in manuscript form more than once. Gives me great feedback. He's like an in-house editor. He's fantastic.
Have there been times where it's like, no, I'm not going to change that. And he's like, you need to change that. You know what I'm saying? That very artistic choice where you're like, here's the thing.
Oh,
and
he knows. He can always suggest, but I'm not going to do everything he says. So I met my literary agency through my little LDS connection.
Pays to go to church.
Pays to go to church. And, you know, part of our secret cabal to take over the world. Mm-hmm. Once again, shown. The mm-hmm. secret women who are taking over the world. She really believed it enough. I kept thinking, oh, maybe I should just, you know, we should stop and give up on this book. She's like, absolutely not. And eventually we did find someone. It was a brand new publisher. It was named Bloomsbury. They were the publisher of Harry Potter in the UK, but
oh, wow.
They just opened a US branch. So they were just really looking to acquire. And I've been with them ever since. I've done 12 books with that editor.
Pretty successful?
Yeah. It's been great. You know, and again, that rejection is just, it's finding time. I really feel like... there was a lot of rejection throughout my career, and it's hard at the time, but I looking back, I really feel like it was the Lord saying, you're just on the wrong path.
Yeah.
The rejection is so good for us because I feel like it's the Lord saying, okay, this is where you need to be. I mean, at the beginning, I was writing short stories and submitting them to the New Yorker, and if I'd been accepted there, that's where I would still be, and I wouldn't be happy there. I know that. And he was just like, No, that's not going to work out because that's really not where you need to be. And eventually rejected until I found the place where I needed to be.
So what was the choice then to kind of stay away from the edgy for you? Was that a difficult choice, especially as rejection letters came? Were you like, maybe I should put a little more in?
No, not at all. That was never been an issue for me. I think once you just know who you are and what you believe, those are the stories I write. I would write terrible edgy books because they would be ridiculous.
And then he grabbed her hand. Is that sexy? Is that a sexy thing? Is grabbing hands sexy?
Yeah, exactly. I do have a lot of hand holding, actually.
Yeah.
Excuse me. Yeah, no, it's... And so my books really come from me. And even though I get emails telling me, thank you so much for writing such clean, wonderful books. Uh-huh. But at the same time, for every book I've written, I get emails telling me, you've been corrupted by the world. It's such a shame that you stoop to so low a level. So it's I'm never thinking about when I'm writing, how can I make this clean or how can I make this appropriate for every audience?
Mm-hmm.
I just have to try and live the best life I can and be a genuine person I can and try to make myself right with the Lord and with people around me that I can, and then hope that what I write will do some good. And I all the time write scenes or things happen in my books that people don't approve of.
Mm-hmm.
But I have to think about what the story needs. And ultimately, if you write a really good, compelling story, people will take what they need from it. And it can be a light to people, whether or not every scene in it is representative of what you want to be. You cannot write a story where the main character is perfect. That's not a good story. And if you read like the parables.
And everything was fine.
Yeah. Exactly. I mean, read the Bible. I mean, the parables in the Bible in the New Testament, they're not all examples of perfect people. Those aren't the stories that we need. And sometimes reading stories about people who make mistakes can be just as inspiring as, well, more inspiring, I think, than reading a story about someone who is perfect all the time. We don't read stories to find what to emulate. We read stories to learn and help us to think.
Do you feel like as a Mormon person that people project Mormon judgment, like that there's some of that that goes on you?
Certainly. I mean,
yeah.
Absolutely. I think you're more in the spotlight. Anytime you're in a person that has any sort of public presence, you're mm-hmm. more in the spotlight. And I have had people apply like, you know, LDS theory to my books and seen things that I did not put in there on purpose. Yeah. But all the same, I mean, in almost all of my books, there's some correlation to some Bible or Book of Mormon story. And in the Goose Girl, there was... I used inspiration from the story of Ammon and the king's sheep in a particular scene, and you know,
knowingly did mm-hmm, that.
Yeah,
okay,
yeah, just inspired by it, and not in a preachy way, and just because those are the stories in my head, and just as much as fairy tales or mythology, the stories of the scriptures are in my head, and so they do come through.
The character's name was Ammon, not
right.
Ammon.
Right. Not quite so obvious, I think. I haven't done what Orson Scott Card has done, where he literally is like retelling scripture stories. But I mean, I think all of that definitely influences what I write, sometimes consciously, sometimes not.
You bring up Orson Scott Card, and then I also think of James Dashner.
Sure.
And then obviously, of course, like Stephanie Meyer. Is there a literary like guild of Mormon writers?
No, not that I know of, unless I'm not invited to the meetings.
Right? Oh, no.
I mean, I know Stephanie. I've known her for years. I know James Dashner. I've met Orson Scott Card. I don't know him well. But there is a really strong group of Utah children's and young adult writers and illustrators. And we are on a listserv. We do events. We do charity events. We are on charity. And it's a great group of people, but it's not just Mormon. There's all kinds of people from different faiths or no faiths.
Where is that if people wanted to find out more about that?
Well, it was called the Rock Canyon Group, and we're actually, that's the secret cabal, because we're not really public.
Oh.
We have a secret listserv. But we do an event every spring called Writing for Charity. It's a writing workshop, and all of our money goes that we make, or we donate our time, and we use the money to buy books for kids in lower income areas.
Can people find out about that event? Is there a website?
Yes. Well, you know, follow me on Twitter, @HaleShannon, or on my website.
Someone already had Shannon Hale?
Yes, can you believe it? And she sent one tweet.
Oh, right? And you're just looking at her going, come on.
But I kind of like how Hale Shannon sounds, you know?
Yeah.
It sounds
Hale
like a
Shannon.
Command. Exactly. But yeah, there's not really a sense. I mean, Writing for Charity, I think, has a website. I think our next event will be in March of 2014.
Cool. Is it just fun, what you do?
It is. It's a lot of work. It's definitely the hardest work I've ever done, probably because it means so much to me. I've never worked in a coal mine, so, you know, I can't compare to that.
Well, try it one day, okay, pal? Try it one day, and then you'll be telling a different story.
But it is great. The balance is crazy.
I would think, because you mentioned before, you have four kids, and we're doing this interview now because you said it's now or 6 months from now.
Right, yeah, it is crazy. And to try to guard my family time mm-hmm. and make sure that my writing and my time and my, you know, authorship time doesn't interfere with my family. And then also trying to guard that writing time. It's so easy to lose that. If people will take all your time, and I have to just say no to almost every invitation I get.
Really?
Yeah.
To that, you're to that point where it's just like, listen, here are the things that I'll do and then the rest.
Yeah. I almost do nothing except for what my publisher tells me I have to do.
Really?
Yeah. It's just too hard to set up things. And I just, I don't have a full-time nanny or an assistant or anything like that. It's just me.
And but should.
I should.
Let me tell you what you should do with your life.
Will you be my full-time assistant?
If you pay me like a full-time assistant. I am the floor guy. I am the floor guy. Seriously, cleanest toilet
yeah?
in my town?
Sweet.
This guy. I don't, kids, I'm not so great with kids. No. Like, kids that can talk to me, I'm okay.
Yeah.
But, like, kids that can't talk, I'm, like, that age and younger, right. like, when they're just kind of laying balls of poopy flesh, I just... I'm not interested.
My twins are two, and they talk a lot.
Yeah,
and they are freaking adorable.
I could do that.
But they only want me. They want nobody else.
Yeah, I wouldn't do any good.
Yeah. It's like they have Velcro, and they're just stuck to me, and they're clinging to my legs desperately, constantly.
Which makes it easy to walk.
It does, yeah.
Too bad you can't kick kids.
Yeah, too bad.
Right? And then so you got twins that are two, and then...
Then I've got a six-year-old and a nine-year-old.
Okay. So is that getting a little easier? You're starting to appreciate the older
kids? It is in some way. Oh, no. They're so great. But it is also, you know, you've got two school-age kids, so you've got all of that stuff going mm-hmm. on. I think it's really hard to straddle the two. You've got two at home and two at school, so you still have all the school volunteering and the carpooling.
So you do all that still, too?
Sure, yeah. You make sure they get homework and they go to their lessons and they practice the piano. And then you've got the two little ones that need the constant nurturing and attention and aren't old enough to go play with a friend in the backyard.
Yeah. Know? Does a nine-year-old like your stuff?
He's just started reading it. He read Princess Academy and
A dude reading a princess book? Uh-oh.
That is important to me. No, not at all. It's very important to me to raise a son that doesn't think that reading a book about a girl is a bad thing.
Good.
I think that he'll grow up much more well-rounded. I think it's ridiculous to raise boys. Like, girls can read anything. And then boys are only allowed to read books about boys. And they're only reading about and learning to have empathy for half of the world. And so girls are growing up so much more flexible and well-rounded. And they're going to be better people persons. And boys are just going to get crushed and left out if they can't change that. If you look at the movies, 80% of the characters are male mm-hmm. and 20% are female.
Mm-hmm.
And a much smaller percentage of that are lead characters. We're raising our boys on a diet of pure boys.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's going to be a real disservice for them.
Hmm. Let me ask,
go home and read Princess Academy, Richie.
I'll go home and read it to my kid.
James Dashner has read it. Orson Scott Card has read it.
Oh, all right.
Wow. And loved it.
You
I've got
pushy.
Photos of him reading it.
Pushy.
I'm pushy.
You're a book pusher.
Read it or change your life. You'll lose 50 pounds.
Oh, no. I could do it. I could stand 50 pounds gone. Let me ask you this. Do you have a calling in your ward right now?
I do. They're very merciful to me. I am the youth service coordinator.
Which means?
Which means on every fifth Wednesday, I help the youth do a service
project. Yeah.
Before that, I was in the nursery for a year. And then before that, I was primary president.
Oh, my gosh.
And we had 250 kids, and I oversaw 70 adult leaders. And
and wrote a book in that time.
Yes.
Or two.
And then I got pregnant with twins, and when I was close to almost on bed rest with my twins, I was like, look, Bishop, let me just lay it out for you. Yeah. What it's going to be like my next year, what it's going to be like with twins. And, you know, I think if he'd read more books about girls, he might have had more
right?
empathy
right? He may have been a little more sympathetic.
right.
Orson Scott Card is more sympathetic.
right. Instead, I had to have the bullet points of...
Yeah.
Of like,
look at this belly.
Imagine now nursing twins. Think about the three-hour block at church.
Yeah. I'm going to be nursing that three-hour block. That's
let's
the thing.
So they mercifully released me, and I've had, you know... much easier calling since.
Nice. If you could pick a calling for yourself, either one that exists or make up one for yourself, what would you have?
My favorite calling I've ever had was Relief Society teacher. I love that because I learned the lesson so much for myself. I love doing the research, putting it together. And then I just, you know, in my work, I do a lot of public speaking and I actually really enjoy it. So I like being up, I'm leading discussion and hearing what people say.
Hmm.
So that's really fun. And then it's not a huge time commitment. It doesn't stress me out.
Yeah.
I'm not an administrative person. I'm terrible at that kind of stuff.
Yeah. What is your favorite part of your faith?
Repentance. I've noticed that when I'm writing in a world, a fantasy world that doesn't have religion and there's no concept of repentance, how dark and bleak that really is, the thought that what you do is permanent. And that knowledge is just life-changing, that whatever happens, whatever happened in the past, there's always change. There's always progression. We're never stuck. We're not predestined. The atonement is real, and we can repent and be forgiven utterly, that God doesn't even remember. That's fantastic.
We ask people at this point to climb up on the Rammy Umptum and let them know where they can find you, websites, Twitter, all that
stuff.
Thank
you that I am better than all those around me, where they can find me. Yeah, I've got a website, shannonhale.com. I blog regularly about all kinds of subjects. I have, you know, Twitter, Hail Shannon.
Yeah.
I have a Facebook page. I friend everybody, so you can come there.
And then last question, just because I'm curious. Utah Hales? Do you fit into that?
It's actually my husband. Hale is my husband's last name, and he was raised by his mom, so we don't really know that branch very much. But we did do a project. We did a couple of graphic novels with Nathan Hale, who is not a relative of ours, but he's of the Hale family, theater family. He was our illustrator for Rapunzel's Revenge and Calamity Jack.
Cool. Well, we hope that this podcast has nourished and strengthened your body, and that if you aren't healthy enough to listen this week, that you will be healthy enough to listen next week. In the meantime, we'll be saving a seat for you on the back row of the Cultural Hall.
Save me a seat. It's sure to be neat on the back row. We really gotta go on the Cultural Hall show.